Hello. Welcome to the show called The Environment. I'm Gene, a volunteer reader with SunSounds of Arizona. I'm going to be reading an article, continuing to read an article, in the Sierra Magazine, the Spring 2024 edition. The last time we were together, I had started an article that was entitled A Tale of Two Coal States. This was written by Elizabeth Kwok Heffernan. And the subtitle was, What Happens to Coal-Dependent Communities When the Coal Goes Away? A lot depends on whether their state government is reality-based. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to read a few paragraphs from the beginning of the article to kind of bring us up to speed and remind us of where we were, and then we'll finish out the rest of the article. As the sun rose on July 23, 2021, a sudden sharp crack echoed across the high desert on the outskirts of Nucla, Colorado. Flickers of light snaked up the support beams holding what was left of the Nucla Station Power Plant's Unit 4. Black clouds poured from the building's base. Within 5 seconds, it collapsed in a rolling roar of sound and smoke, and then the 215-foot steel stack next to it toppled into the ruins. Tri-State Generation and Transmission had finished the demolition of the first of its 4 wholly owned coal-fired power plants. You might say that the era of coal in the west end of Montrose County ended with a bang. For decades, Nucla Station and the source of its coal, the nearby New Horizon Mine, had formed the backbone of the West End's economy. They provided well-paying union jobs in a remote region where other options were slim, and it pumped property taxes into the little towns of Nucla, Naturita, Norwood, and Paradox. But when the plant and mine shut down in 2019, their closures triggered an economic tumult about the communities are still reckoning with today. Now, about 500 miles north, the Crow tribe of South Central Montana grapples with a similar situation. There, too, coal has propped up the economy. But the tribe's coal mine has been in steep decline for the past 9 years. Another nearby mine closed in 2021, and Montana's largest power plant coal-burning Colstrip retired 2 of its 4 units in 2020. So on a reservation already struggling with poverty and unemployment due to the cumulative effects of colonization, coal's downward spiral threatens further suffering. But there is a key difference in the way Colorado and Montana are handling their transitions away from coal. Colorado is putting millions of dollars and a first-of-its-kind state administrative office toward helping coal communities shift to new, sustainable, diversified futures. But Montana, on the other hand, is clinging to coal so tightly that any talk of transition is seen as betrayal, leaving its coal regions on their own. As methane gas and renewable energy sources have become much cheaper and environmental regulations have restricted carbon emissions, coal production nationwide is half of what it was in 2008. Its crash has evaporated tens of thousands of coal jobs from West Virginia to Alaska. Now, while that's undoubtedly good news for the climate, every shuttered mine and power plant means more employees who need to find another way to feed their families. It means more towns that lose the funds they relied on for schools, libraries, and fire departments. As the global energy transition takes hold, ensuring a just transition grows in importance. The International Labor Organization defines the concept as greening the economy in a way that is as fair and inclusive as possible to everyone concerned, creating decent work opportunities and leaving no one behind. Now, that can mean job retraining, thoughtful community development, and ideally, money to help those affected get back on their feet. The people of coal country, former miners and power plant workers, construction workers, mom and pop business owners, they face profound transformations of their daily lives, and how they come out may depend on the state they live in. Tanya Naramore also learned that she was out of a coal job at that nuclear station meeting in 2016. A lifelong resident of the West End, she had been working at New Horizon Mine for 19 years, driving 100-ton haul trucks. She had plenty of working years ahead of her, and she considered transferring to the Craig coal mine. But, Naramore says, I just couldn't bring myself to do it. I figured coal was going to be non-existent before too long. So, she applied to work for the Montrose County Road and Bridge Department, but she was turned down because she didn't have a commercial driver's license. Fortunately, the first influx of just transition cash was reaching the West End from the job-promoting Markle Foundation. It paid for a workforce development program called Skillful West End at the end of 2018. It hired local Carla Reams to help manage the transition. So Reams visited the power plant and the mine, offering to help employees with job retraining, resume writing, job searches, and Naramore was one of the many who took her up on it. Well, with Reams' guidance, Naramore went to truck driving school and earned her Class A license and reapplied with the county. She landed the job. She's had to get used to a significant pay cut, but she likes the new gig and the fact that it's only 4 miles from home. Tri-State also kicked in $500,000 for the community through the West End Pay It Forward Trust, which has funded nonprofit programs, including suicide prevention, as well as an ATV for the search and rescue team, and new siding for a community building in the little town of Paradox. Much more money soon followed. During the 2019 session, Colorado legislature created the Office of Just Transition within the State Department of Labor and Employment, the first of its kind in the country. This was incredibly necessary because we know our economy is changing. That's a quote from Senator Faith Winter, a Democrat who represents Denver's northwest suburbs and was one of the bill's sponsors. She said there are winners and losers, and we need to ensure that we're taking care of our workers and our communities that have relied on coal. Well, in 2022, the legislature voted to stock the OJT with $15 million from the state's general fund. That money went toward the creation of a worker assistance program and to direct grants for 8 Colorado coal communities. Well, the West End's coal workers had already moved on by the time the OJT grants came around, but the community still has priority status. As Tooker put it, we've already transitioned, but we haven't recovered. A task force of West End leaders decided to focus on major infrastructure projects in order to pave the way for new residents and businesses. Michaela Gordon, the executive director of the West End Economic Development Corporation, said, "The septic in Nucla and Naturita is pushing 100 years old. Anytime we try to tap into a pipe, it bursts. You can't grow if you can't flush your toilets." The OJT awarded almost $1.75 million to Nucla, Naturita, and Norwood for wastewater system upgrades. Even communities that have not yet lost their coal are spending on economic diversification projects, like developing a boat ramp on the local river and building a new business district. Now, West Enders have their gripes about the Office of Just Transition. Mostly, it's the requirements for how each round of funding can be spent. Montrose County Commissioner Sue Hansen said, "I'd like to see this money more nimbly used. The communities know what they need." But broadly speaking, people recognize their good fortune, and some expect Colorado's other coal communities will have an easier time of it when their power plants or mines finally shut down, as long as they have planned ahead. Tooker said, "I don't think they'll have near the bumps and near the loss that we've had. They've got the resources now. What they want to get done, they should be able to get done." Gordon describes the West End's transition as being in the marathon phase. Community members have plenty of ideas for how to move forward. Many would like to see a revival of uranium mining. Others hope for a new hospital or a solar farm. Gordon said, we would happily welcome a larger company to come in, but being able to support three or four smaller employers makes more sense for the community than one larger employer does. There's still a lot of work to be done, and the West End plans to put its next rounds of transition dollars toward building more housing to accommodate growth, maintaining an apprenticeship program, and further developing its tourism potential. West End's future is already coming into view. An organic grocery store started up in the area in 2019. The region's Red Rock Canyons, high desert landscapes, and abundant public land support a burgeoning network of mountain biking and ATV trails that attract more and more tourists, and businesses to support them are beginning to arrive. Brock Benson, whose parents worked at the Peabody Mine, moved back in 2021 and opened a bike shop, Paradox Cycle, in Nacharita in 2022. Now, even though a combination bike shop and pizza parlor opened across the street from him in 2023, Benson says business at Paradox Cycle is booming. A couple of miles past Nacharita, on the site of the former mining industry company town of Vancouver, Natalie Binder launched a glamping and arts center called Camp V in 2021. She found out after she got the contract that her grandparents had lived there during uranium's heyday. When she first invested, she says, just after the news of the coal closures, a lot of people were like, "This community is going away. Why would you do something like that?" But Binder saw hope and opportunity in the outdoor recreation and the new trails, and in the formation of the Economic Development Corporation. She said, "I said I want to be a part of this. I knew I wasn't going to be going into this alone." Binder pieced together funding to get her business off the ground. Some of her major investors are part of a federal Opportunity Zone project, which offers tax breaks for investing in economically distressed communities. She has also won grants from the Colorado Office of Economic Development and International Trade's Colorado Creative Industries Program, then the nonprofit Telluride Foundation, and the West End Pay It Forward Trust. She said, "Honestly, it would have been so challenging, if not impossible, to do a lot of the stuff we've done without some of these granting opportunities." So Camp V, with its rehabbed miners' cabins and water tank stargazing and dandelion-shaped art installations, it's started to become an international draw. Binder says, "It's interesting to be in a transitional economy. It's a cool opportunity for people to define what the future looks like for themselves and their children." The door at Tippy Creek Coffee Company stood propped open on a warm Monday afternoon last October, leading to a bustling scene on the main drag in Crow Agency. That's just Crow to locals. Several customers got the lunch special, chicken fried rice. Others came for ice cream or the rainbow of Lotus energy drinks. One man sat up in the front with a laptop near a large painting of a bison by owner Tana Cummins' brother, Ben Peace. Cummins said, "People come in the door and say, 'Geez, I feel like I've walked out of Crow and into another world.' Well, that's what we're trying to do. Coffee, in our culture. It gathers people." Tippy Creek began as a mobile coffee trailer in 2021. When Cummins, a former teacher, needed a flexible job that she could bring her baby daughter to. Now, that's where it would have stayed if Charlene Johnson, director of the Crow agency Plenty Doors Community Development Corporation, had not had offered her a spot in the nonprofit's business incubator. Cummins moved her coffee business to Plenty Doors building in 2023. So with reduced rent and support programs like QuickBooks training, she was able to hire two employees. She shares the building and the incubator program with a credit union, a construction business, and an independent news publisher. In the next year or so, Plenty Doors plans to move into a larger building and expand its incubator to 6 or 7 native-owned businesses. So with coal on the decline, the program is exactly what the Crow Nation needs, a leg up for small businesses to diversify the reservation economy. Still, new enterprises face significant challenges. A major one, says Plenty Doors Operation Manager Charitina Fitzler, it's a dire lack of suitable buildings, both commercial and residential. She wonders what will happen to incubated businesses after they graduate in 3 years. She said, where are they going to go? Just transition funding, like Colorado's, would be a big help. The Wayola Development Fund's Kabuti said, it's the difference between starving to death and having access to a buffet table. But the state of Montana continues to cling to coal. During the 2023 legislative session, the state's Republican supermajority passed laws instructing state agencies to ignore greenhouse gas emissions when drawing up environmental reviews and making it easier for coal mines to expand. Governor Greg Gianforte touts an all-of-the-above energy policy. And in January of 2023, Montana's largest monopoly utility, Northwestern Energy, expanded its ownership of the Colstrip plant, pledging to keep it firing through 2030, drawing cheers from lawmakers at a reception in a Helena Hotel ballroom. Back in 2019, State Senator Denise Hayman, a Democrat from Bozeman, introduced a securitization bill to help retire coal-fired power plants like Northwestern Energy's Colstrip. But Republicans objected to the bill's just transition funding, and it was removed. The year before that, the nonprofit Montana Environmental Information Center and the Northern Cheyenne Tribe, whose reservation neighbors the Crows to the east, both requested coal transition funding in a utility rate case before the Public Services Commission, and both were denied. Ann Hedges, the Environmental Center's co-director, said, "The state of Montana is not interested in talking about the future of coal. They think that if they pass some kind of bill that would assist with the transition, they are admitting there's going to be a transition, and that is heresy in this world. What they're doing is screwing over coal communities." State Representative Sharon Stewart Paragoy, a Democrat from Crow Agency and a tribal member, said, "At this point, there's no hope, there's no help for the Crow tribe, and there's no interest to help. Without support from the state, some members of the Crow Nation are working to diversify the tribal economy on their own. There's talk of reviving the reservation's casino or developing a cannabis industry. Some want to see solar or wind projects, like the commercial solar farm the Northern Cheyenne Tribe has proposed with the help of huge incentives from the Inflation Reduction Act. Now, tribes typically would not qualify for federal tax credits because they're sovereign nations exempt from federal income tax. But the 2022 law made the credits available as a rebate. It also bumped up rebate opportunities for clean energy projects on tribal lands and regions affected by coal closures. That's rebates for which the Crow and the Northern Cheyenne Nations both qualify. But for now, like in Colorado, it's largely the nonprofits that are getting the projects done, led by Plenty Doors, which launched in 2018. Besides its incubator, the nonprofit also provides development help and education for entrepreneurs, offers loans, runs a day labor program, organizes art markets, among many other projects. Just down the highway, the Wyola Development Fund is establishing a racetrack at the community's rodeo grounds, a small arena and a single set of bleachers on the edge of a field with views of the snow-topped Bighorn. Kabuti can already picture the scene when the relay track finally opens, horses zipping around the field, people from across this remote corner of the reservation gathered together to cheer, locals setting up food stands. The development fund brought in heavy equipment to cut the track in 2022, but a low-lying section flooded. The project is currently stalled as they figure out how to pay for a drainage system. Well, Kabuti is all in on other ideas to uplift the Crow economy. Her town needs a coffee shop and a gas station or an EV charging station to pull in traffic from Interstate 90. The Wyola Development Fund could rehab a run-down building, adding solar panels, and turn it into townhomes. She also has her eye on an old church that could be converted into a small medical clinic. And how about a campground for travelers? She points to an open grassy area, which she imagines as a venue for powwows or dances. But she's first pinning her hopes on the racetrack. She says, "It's a visible, tangible thing that people can see. And that's what's required to get people's image to shift. Dreams are just dreams until you wake up and put some muscle in to change your situation." It's easy to wonder what people like Leslie Kabuti and Charlene Johnson might do with a few million extra dollars. And that was the article, A Tale of Two Coal States, by Elizabeth Quack Heffernan. Our next article is a little short piece entitled Dinner Time in Cameron, Louisiana. John Allaire was having a good day. He hollered over his shoulder at his friend Matt, "Show 'em your redfish." Matt hoisted a fish the size of a small toddler out of a white bucket, beaming, and said, "And these are just the small ones." Allaire, warm and easygoing, sporting a short gray beard and a camo jacket, he's a retired environmental engineer who once worked in the oil and gas industry. But on this winter day in Cameron, Louisiana, he and Matt had spent all morning fishing and duck hunting, and now they were reaping the rewards. Allaire had fired up the gas grill next to his camper and was already busy making his specialty, jalapeno poppers, peppers grown in his garden, stuffed with shrimp that he caught himself. Allaire said, "We live off the land down here," as he cracked a bush beer. Well, the friends got to work. Allaire gripped a massive oyster in a blue dish rag. "This is my technique," he explained cheerfully, balancing the oyster on edge. "You find the eye." With one hand, he worked the shucking knife into the hinge. Then he picked up an old hammer and enthusiastically whacked the butt of the shucking knife until the oyster popped open. His dog Chula watched, rapt. Allaire handed the empty half to her, and she trotted off happily with the shell in her mouth, curling up in the grass near where Matt cleaned the redfish. "Just like a pro," he noted. Allaire announced, "I found a pearl the other day, about a quarter inch long. I kept it." Whack! "Oh, there's a beautiful oyster right there." Two more coolers packed with oysters waited at his feet. Now, Allaire used to harvest oysters along the Calcasieu ship channel, but ever since Commonwealth LNG started leasing that land for its future liquefied natural gas terminal, no one is allowed out there. So Allaire had to buy these ones from a local fisher. Much of the land surrounding the camper is charred black from a wildfire, making it appear that Allaire has conjured abundance out of nothing. His camp, neatly kept and set on a concrete slab under a pitched roof, lies on a spit of coastal westland by the bank of the channel in Louisiana's southwest corner. Out back is a greenhouse he built himself from hurricane debris. His south lawn dissolves into brackish marsh, busy with ducks and ibis and roseate spoonbills, and just beyond that lies the Gulf of Mexico. But across the channel, clearly visible from his camp, towers Venture Global's Calcasieu Pass Terminal. The complex, spanning 1,000 acres, has already racked up thousands of permit violations, though it began producing LNG only 2 years ago and is not yet officially operating. But that has not stopped the terminal from near-constant gas flaring, which Allaire has documented with a camera fastened to one of his carport beams. And next to that pass, Venture Global is planning a second, larger terminal, CP2, which would be the largest in the United States. Meanwhile, Commonwealth is building its terminal atop Allaire's old oyster harvesting grounds. And elsewhere in Cameron Parish, there is Chenier Energy's Sabine Pass project in Johnson Bayou, Cameron LNG in Hackberry, and five other plants announced but not yet under construction. Since 2016, when the export of liquefied gas was first allowed, exports have skyrocketed, even as they have driven up the cost of energy at home. The United States is now the world's leading LNG exporter, and most of it comes from right here in Cameron Parish. And that was the article, Dinner Time in Cameron, Louisiana. We're almost out of time. I'll better say goodbye. I'm Gene, a volunteer reader with Sun Sounds of Arizona, and you have been listening to the show called The Environment, and I've been reading from the Sierra Magazine, the Spring 2024 edition. Have a good week. I hope you keep on listening. Bye-bye.